Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this episode number 326. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Appreciate those of you that like and share and comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. I also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for bringing these episodes to you for free. They're great friends, first and foremost, but they also have a great product. So if you're in the market, reach out to them. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show the next time you see him at a conference or something. This week, I'm joined by a friend of mine, Isaiah Casillaja.
Right? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, let's get it.
Yeah. I butcher his last name, but he is a friend and a guy that's doing some great things. And really, I've respected for a long time on the way that he's grown his program. He's put a lot of time, blood, and sweat equity into it. And we always talk about on the show, make the big time where you're at. And I think Isaiah has done a great job of doing that across the board. But man, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Absolutely. It's my honor. And like I was saying before, I remember episode like 4 and you're at like 326. So it's pretty fun. And it's an honor to be on the podcast, and hopefully I can give other strength coaches something to learn from.
No doubt, man. Well, I alluded to your journey just a little bit, but I mean, you've been, I know you worked for Lauren, you've worked at Colorado State of the School of the Mines, Colorado. You've pretty much stayed out in Colorado for most of your career, but
yeah.
Talk a little bit about, real Reader's Digest version of your journey, but like which stop has really made you grow the most?
Yeah. And we'll probably talk about it a little bit more, but I got a unique start at actually being like an entrepreneur, like a business owner before I was a strength coach. And it kind of tied in perfectly to wanting to become a strength coach and then how I've succeeded now. But, I mean, as far as business goes, we were a media company. Me and my cousin started a media company when I was 21 years old, and it was right at the start of the recession, and it was, you know, businesses were closing down, people getting laid off, but we found a way to make our business work, and that mostly was just being comfortable with being very, very uncomfortable. Like, we had, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on the line. Like, we were getting very little sleep, and at the time, I'm 21, so. You know, that's, you don't know any better. So, but I got used to being in uncomfortable situations. And also, you know, I'm 21 going to talk to a 50-year-old on a business owner on how to buy some advertising in our paper, essentially, because we covered high school sports in Colorado. And, it was unique. It got me used to, you know, planning ahead and selling myself and just being used to, I mean, there is times like, we go to bed at 2 a.m. and wake up at 6 to go work out and then right back to it. Like, it was all I knew. And, you know, it was funny. Like, we survived off of cereal. And at the time, I'm lactose intolerant. So I'd eat a bowl of cereal and I'd just die afterwards. But I didn't know any better. It was like I just got to survive. So I got used to being really uncomfortable. And I conditioned myself to, like, if this is like some of the worst stuff I could go through, I could easily make it through anything else. So when I decided to go back to school, be a strength coach, like, this is anything I wanted to do, I was able to go get my undergrad in 2 years instead of 4 years, because I took 24 credit hours a semester. I got straight A's. Like, this was easy work compared to what I just went through. So
sure.
And then the starting of, you know, the internships and traveling around, it's like there'll be times you look at yourself in the mirror, it's like, this is what I really want to do with my life? And my answer was always yes. And I was like, I've seen worse than this before. So, but as far as like strength and conditioning goes, at the School of Mines, I work under a guy named Adam Long, and I just came off of my internship with Lauren Lando, and they had the Denver Broncos lockout. It was the 2011 lockout. So yeah. We had the whole team there. And then he also had Missy Franklin, and that was right before she went, killed it in the Olympics and everything. So I went from really high profile athletes to like a collegiate team environment, which is, it was a huge difference. So at the School of Mines, I was able to learn how to be a coach, because with Lauren, I refined the science and all my biomechanics. But at the School of Mines, I learned to take all my education, learn how to coach, and then learn how to coach big groups, and then multiple big groups a day. And, you know, really fell in love with the impact that we have, and like found my true passion as a coach, which I was able to take, you know, to, you know, Colorado and then eventually here.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point that you brought out there. Was, you know, I would always talk about with our athletes or with our coaches, you know, the statement I would always say is as compared to what, right? So like, this is a long day, but as compared to somebody that's walking 20 miles there and back to get water, is that how long, right. You know, how long of a day is it really, you know, or,
right.
You know, it's hot, but as compared to what, you know, whatever. And I think that's important, to that mental reframing. If you're going to go down this path of strength and conditioning, I think it's super important, because it is tough, you know, and if you got one toe out, it's going to be hard, right? You got to be all the way in, but it's important to remember that, you know, tough times don't last, but tough people do. Right. And,
exactly. Yep.
And if you're really passionate about it, you find a way. So I love that story.
Yeah.
Before we dig into a little bit of that, I always like to talk about the mistake, right? Like, what's one of the biggest mistakes you've made?
Right.
Because I think it's so important to learn from other people's, you know, path and journey.
Right.
So what is one of the biggest mistakes you've made as a coach, and how you've learned from it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I did my research, because I knew this question was coming up, and I mean, I make mistakes all the time, like as far as programming goes and everything. Like, it's, I think mistakes are the biggest educator, because like, you tend to remember your mistakes a lot more. But I think the one biggest, like the thing that I always still work on is, and it's maybe just because of the situation I'm in, but it's being envious and, like, you know, always trying to see. I've learned, like, to not compare myself to, like, you know, an Alabama, or like, we had just had Aaron over here in like USC. Like, it's not even like apples to oranges. It's like apples to a rock. Like, there's just, I don't compare myself to them, but other programs, like other Division II programs or some FCS schools that are really killing it. I'm like, and especially when I was first starting, cause I was started out as a volunteer at MSU Denver. I was the first strength coach here. So like, it wasn't even like there was a bad strength coach before me. Like, it was like no strength coach. It was,
right.
It was P90X like workout videos and like stuff. So like, starting from literally nothing and building it up, there was a couple of times along the way where I'm just like, man, it'd be a lot easier to go back to Colorado, or it'd be a lot easier if I had the support from like other schools have. And I think when you're vengeful or envious, or he's got like a chip on your shoulder, like it clouds your judgment, and it clouds your ability to make sound decisions, whether it's and you know, that's when you start to see guys start chasing logos, or you know, start, you know, thinking the grass is always greener. And like, having seen like NFL level Division I, Power 5, and Division II, it's same stuff, different day. Like,
right.
More money, more problems. Like, it's, the grass is not always greener. And you gotta, like you always say, and that's part of one of the best pieces of coaching advice is making the big time where you're at. Like, it's just, eventually I caught on, because even I remember when I first started, I direct messaged you on Twitter, and this was like way back, like 5 or 6 years ago. And you know, you had mentioned make the big time where is that, and it was actually from your podcast. You have all these coaches, and at the time you were, you know, hey, what's your contact info? And I was like, all right, I'm literally gonna call out every one of those coaches on Iron Game Chalk Talk.
Right.
I'm gonna reach out to them, see if you're really about that life. And like, Brandon Marcello, Joe Ken, all those guys like got back to me, which I was kind of shocked. I was like, all right, and even you too. I was like, yo, these guys are genuinely about helping us out. But everybody said make the big time where it's at, and I was like, all right, like. Coach Mack, you've been at Tennessee, you've been everywhere, and NFL, everything. I was like, at the time, I was like, it's easy for you to say, like, I'm at a D2, like, struggling. Sure. But eventually, my mindset shifted, and I was like, yo, like, I was at Colorado, and a couple of the guys from Colorado came out to Metro, and they saw our weight room, our new weight room that we had, and they're like, we envy you, like, this is where we want to be. And that's when it kind of switched over, like, all right, like, making the big time where it's at, it's like your best move.
Exactly. 100%. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, take the chasing the logos and the rat race and the more money and all that away from it. Being at a small school or being at a place that has limited resources makes you a better coach. You know, you have to think outside the box. You have to be creative. You know, and that just compounds if you allow it to in the bigger situations that you're in, right?
Right.
But the other part of that is the job security part. I mean, you got young kids, a young family. Yeah. You know, when you make the big time where you're at and you have that kind of investment in a place, you know, I was at South Florida for 10 years. I probably could have stayed at South Florida for another 10 years or maybe 30 years if I wanted to, because I was so invested in that place and in the athletes and the administration and whatnot that, you know, there's something to be said for that, to buy one house and go to one church and, you know, live in one community and friends. I mean, that's, you know, there's something to be said for that. People don't recognize when they're chasing the logo. So I agree with you, man.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that, you know, that you and I kind of resonate with and you taking even a step further is, you know, you've gone back to school now to get your master's in business administration. I don't know if you have already or you're still
going. Yeah, I graduated last month with an executive master's in business administration.
So, you know, what was the origin story of that? Like, what prompted you to do that?
Right. And it all comes back to, like, what you were saying, make it the big time where you're at. And I was literally, once I made up, I was stopped being vengeful, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to be a good coach, and I want to do it all here. I wanted to make it to a point, and I think it was Joe Ken that said this, was like, make it so good, like, you don't want to leave. So I was like, all right, what am I going to do here to make my position here, like, so good, like, where you can back up a Brinks truck, and I'm like, I'm good, like, I'm making just as much money as anybody else, like, you know, do my program the way I want to do it. Like, not only was it making it big here, but I wanted to make it so big, like, where you can pull me out of here, even if you tried, unless it was like a really exceptional, like, opportunity. So once I decided that, and you know what this is like, having that, you know, having being at a small school, is it all comes down to money. So it's not like they're like, look, we don't want you to have an assistant strength coach, or we don't want you to have, you know, a brand new weight room or illegal barbells. It's like, we don't have the money. So I was like, all right, well, and that's where I fell on my business background. I was like, well, can I fundraise it? And they're like, yeah, you can go fundraise it. And I was like, well, what's the rules? Like, how much money can I fundraise? They're like, there is no rules. Like, as long as you record and all, like, you go as make as much money as you want. And I was like, all right, done. Like, and I was an entrepreneur. So I was like, done. Like, I was selling advertisement in a newspaper during a recession, and I was making it happen. So I was like, this is going to be no big deal. So ended up running into one of our big donors, and he's a big businessman. And you know, weight room stuff isn't cheap, and like, new weight room it's expensive. So, and when I'm making these asks, at least in the business side of things, I was like, look, it's marketing. You're gonna get more money coming back to your company and just advertise through us. But with you know, weight rooms and the collegiate side of things, it's definitely more of like, you know, you got to pull on some heartstrings. You can't really say like, we're going to get you your money back, because it's a charity. Like, you're going to give us money. And so I learned my biggest deficiency is when I was talking with some big time donors, is, you know, I got to speak their language. So I was lucky enough to talk to Donnell Boucher I think last summer, and he's got a dual master's as well. And his is more at the time focused on, you know, becoming more on the administration side of things.
And he, leadership, I think, is what he got.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he nailed it on the head. Is like, you got to speak the language of where you're going to go. So for me, I wanted to speak the language of business, and I knew it wasn't until I started my MBA and I proved to like our donors, like I'm serious about this. And then my capstone and everything was revolving around how to fundraise around strength and conditioning, that they saw like I was serious about this. And then, you know, for me, it's, you know, money. It, I mean, you can get more money, you get nicer facilities, you can get more scholarships, you know, hopefully increases winning. Like it's, I think a lot of my internships or when I was an assistant, they don't prepare you for that as a head coach, like managing your own budget. But also like, if you want to like get more equipment, like, you know, go get it. You just got to fundraise for it. So that's what I did. And that was my main push, is like to prove to donors and administration, like I am all in on making MSU Denver Strength Conditioning like the biggest and the best. Like I know we're a division two, but I always tell my staff, like, look, if you put us in the same situation, you take away everybody's $1 million weight rooms and you take everybody's blue chip athletes, what kind of staff are you there with? And that was our big push, is like making sure me and my staff were always like, you could take us and throw us in a $1 million weight room and we'd function at a high level as we did with our, you know, smaller weight room and million teams and three coaches. But that was it.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's so smart. And, you know, this is a conversation I'm having with my own kids right now as they're choosing their majors. Mm-hmm. And I'm really kind of gearing all of my kids towards business, because everything is a business, right? Yep. I mean, mm-hmm. medicine's a business, law's a business, you know, coaching is a business. And if you understand the economics behind it, that I always say, you know, you got to know the lyrics, right? So if you're singing a song, but it's the completely wrong lyrics, you look like an idiot. And I think that's what strength coaches do, right? They go up there and they're talking recruiting and they're talking, you know, set rep protocols, and you're not speaking the same language. But if you're up there and you're talking injury rates and athlete experience and all these types of things, now it starts to resonate with them to where it's like, okay, that's cool. You can make that decision, but I could go over here and sit down with the student athletic council and talk about how we're not making what's, you know, the decision that's in their best interest.
Right.
Which, exactly. You know, what do we want to do here? And I think that it's a very powerful position that you put yourself in as a head strength coach. If you can basically tell the CPA of the university, you don't need to give me that budget this year, I've got it covered.
Right.
Oh, and they're able to put that money towards something else. Well, now they don't want to replace that person that can bring in their own money.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, you talk about how to create job security.
Yeah.
In an unstable environment, that's how you create job security, is that you become, you know, a way, you know, indispensable that way. Let's dig into that a little bit, Isaiah, because a lot of coaches that really are like, okay, cool, you sold me. I want to understand the business of strength conditioning.
Yep.
You know, we were talking off camera about your hat, you know, and how you did this kind of logo around being a pirate.
Yeah.
What were some of the things that you did early on to really start to, you know, like to start to generate some income or some resources for your department?
Yeah. And it, like you were saying, it goes back to that. Like, I wanted to prove to the administration here, like, not only like are you making a sound investment, you know, bringing me on full time, building our new weight room and everything, but I wanted to show you, like, I will go and make my own money. Like, I will relieve some of the burden of us having to ask you guys for new barbells and new stuff every year. Like, we'll handle that. Like, just, you know, we'll make your lives easier. And it goes a long way. Or even stuff like, you know, we got new Alico barbells. We're like, look, they last a lot longer than every other barbell that we've seen so far. And in the long run, it saves administration and the school money when they don't have to replace their equipment or their flooring or their racks or stuff every year, versus like, if you just get the good stuff right off of the bat, and it'll save you money in the long run. And even like stuff, talking with our sports medicine staff, be like, look, if we can do this type of training, it's at least with our sports medicine staff, we have, you know, shown the decrease in injuries. And I was like, that's a decrease in insurance premiums and everything. We're going to have to pay for surgeries at the end of the year, like little stuff like that, where it's like, you know, everybody speaks the language of money. Like our sports medicine doctors, our director of sports performance, our athletic director, and our president, like we all like money is like the language we all speak. So if you can prove to, you know, your administration and everything, like we'll save you money and we can make our own, we can do it. But and it goes back to when I first started here, we had nothing. Like we had a zero budget. And the first, I want to say, I'm going, this is my start of my seventh year. My first 2.5 years, I was a volunteer technically. And I had an intern staff under me the first couple of years. And I kind of joked with them. I was like, look, I'm a volunteer head strength coach with volunteers working underneath them.
Right.
I promise you it'll work out better, I hope. So once eventually when we went to full-time, but I was letting my administration know, like, yo, like we are going to like scrounge around. We're going to find every nook and cranny where we can get a nickel or find some piece of equipment. So we have like a trash like recycle pile that's not too far away from the weight room that's for the whole university. And I found out about it, and it turns out that's where a lot of executives from the school and actually the school in general put desks and chairs and cabinets and drawers and a whole bunch of stuff to, and they're really nice stuff, like it was all straight metal. And like they threw it away because they get a budget every year to replace all that stuff. So we would go over there in our golf cart and load up like our first desks and chairs and like cabinets for our band and everything all came from the trash pile. So the grounds guys would kind of laugh at us and call us pirates. So I kind of took that moniker and we turned our staff logo into we call it the Jolly Roger. It's like the skull and crossbones, but it's like a skull with two barbells. And, you know, we just, it lets know that's our mentality throughout the whole thing. Like we are conditioned to survive like in the worst conditions, even though we're in a very good position right now. If we train, you know, if we train at a level where I could feel like you said in the introduction to your podcast, like I could take a 25 pound weight and, you know, make you hate life. Like for us, it's like we can take a rock and out train any coach with any team and just using a rock. Like if we can operate like on a Spartan level, then we could, you know, take our nice weight room and our nice stuff and actually really make it happen.
Yeah, I totally agree. I know. So, I mean, early on you pillaged out of necessity, right? You kind of, you know, you went and you found things that you just needed to be able to just even do the job. Now you've gone as further with things to actually create, you know, a pathway for people to give and, you know, regularly, whether or not that's cultivating relationships with donors or I think you've ran like a gear type of tribe every year, stuff like that. What, you know, what are some things like that that you've done, or what would you say would be the most, the thing that you've started or done that has had the biggest impact on your bottom line in terms of bringing resources to the staff?
Yeah, definitely. So one was our gear order, and that was our first one. Is, you know, I definitely believe in like look good, feel good, play good. And that goes for like the staff as well. And we're a Nike school, and luckily like we have some, you know, pretty nice Nike gear that we're able to get. But the athletes always have wanted it. Because, you know, they get the team issued gear, which is not, you know, you get a t-shirt and shorts and a pair of shoes, you know. And I had seen, I want to say it was like Boston University, I think, had a t-shirt sale. And I just reached out to that coach. I was like, yo, you know, how do you do this? And I found out East Bay's, who we technically, East Bay and Nike, were partnered up with. And this goes back to my MBA. So I was able to find out we can do a sale. And the biggest, I think, roadblock a lot of coaches do that do a gear sale is a lot of times you have to buy your own inventory, which takes capital up front. So you're going to have to save up, you know, $1,200, $1,500, buy all your shirts and then sell it. And then you're going to be the ones packaging it, sending it out, and you're absorbing those costs and everything, all that stuff. And then you got to hope to goodness gracious that you sell all your inventory so you're not left with a whole bunch of dead money. But at least with East Bay now, it's just a team store. I don't have to do any inventory. I don't have to ship it. You just go buy it like Amazon, and at the end of the sale, they send it out. So I was like, it's a really easy opportunity where it takes zero money up front to get this t-shirt sale going, and then we send it out. And it actually worked out pretty well. But This year was a record-breaking year, and it just went back to like what I learned in my MBA is just like a marketing strategy. Like I was priming people with our new logo and everything in March, and our sales in September. So it's been slowly building up. And then another thing is crowdfunding. Like our school does a crowdfunding once a year. It's called the Day of Giving. And you know, when we had nothing, I did my best to make a lot of FaceTime with a lot of individuals across campus. Like I had to get out of the weight room, not just meet with the administration, but like there's a donor and alumni, you know, relations for the whole university. And I was like, look, I have nothing. Like, is there anything you can do to like get me out there? And they're like, well, we have a Day of Giving where it's like, well, record a video of you. And it's just like a crowdfunding page for one day. And we advertise it to all of our alumni. And once I got on there, we killed it. And I was like, all right, we need to do this again. And eventually that's been our biggest, huge, like our largest yearly money maker is that crowdfunding. And it's just, you know, it goes again, like all of our donors we have are lined up for that one day in April. So like I'm talking to all of our donors now, we got pamphlets, we got a big old strategy. So when we do get that day in April, we make as much money as we possibly can as far as donations go. And it kind of takes us into that next year. And then with the t-shirt sales as well.
Yeah. Very, I mean, good. This is awesome stuff. This stuff, I like, to me, it's really the job, right? The strength and conditioning, as you know, people have read in my book, I think to be a success, you have to be a great technician. You have to be a great manager of time, people, and resources, but you have to be an entrepreneur as well. And think outside the box. And that doesn't mean like, get on the internet and claim that you're the best strength coach and sell workouts, right? That's not what I mean. What I mean is this type of stuff where you go and you find solutions, outside the box solutions to what you're doing. So I got a couple follow-ups with this. One is like I did something similar, and I'm not saying right or wrong here, but like I had a hard time asking our athletes for money in any way, right? So how have you overcome that objection?
Right. And it goes back to my days of selling, like advertising for our business. I was like, look, I'm going to walk into a shopping mall or like a little shopping center. I'm going to go into every store. I don't care what you are. If you sell exotic fish and like reptiles, like, do you want a kid to have a, you know, a pet snake here? Like throw some advertising in here. And you know, I didn't have a problem talking to kids because I knew the kids, we have like a tremendous biome amongst our student athletes. Like they love the weight room. Like we're talking like soccer teams, cross country teams that like normally, you know, wouldn't love it. Like they love the weight room. And I just was like, look, and at the time, like we didn't have a budget. So I was literally like, look, we have no budget. And like, if you want to have some of the nicer stuff, you know, that we have here, we need your help. But at least with us, with the t-shirt sales, I was like, look, you want our Windrunner jacket that I'm wearing right now? You have a chance to buy it. Like, you know, here it is. Like it's branded in our logo and everything, because it's hard to, you can't get our logo unless you buy it from us or you're on staff. So I was like, look, you want our logo? You want a Windrunner? Like you buy it. And like, and I just straight up tell them, like, you help us. Like, and not only do you help us, like you help out every athlete that comes into the MSU Denver even long after you're gone, because these barbells and these racks and the floor, all this stuff is going to last a lot longer than what you're going to be here. So you not only do you help give back to a program that handles all athletes, or not just like cross country, like you're going to help out the softball team from 5 years from now, you'll help out the men's soccer team from 10 years from now. Like everything you do has a big impact on what we're doing, and like the kids love it. Like we're able to upgrade our weight room. We have tablets and we got all the bells and whistles and everything, and they think it's awesome. And they kind of take pride in their weight room. They're like, sure, like we'll buy a shirt and it's going to go back to us and it's going to make us look good in the long run. So
yeah,
it's just kind of building that up.
I think what you do differently that I would recommend everybody listening to is that you have a third party provider that's removed, right? So like that money's going to East Bay and then it's coming back to you, as opposed to they're coming in, you're giving them a t-shirt and they're giving you a check. And I think I like that system a lot better, because I think it prevents any kind of impropriety or anything where you have to protect yourself, right? This is a It's a weird time we live in.
Right.
I think a second objection that I get a lot when I hear stuff like this is, for example, I got to a point where I was fundraising about $100,000 a year for our department at South Florida.
Yeah.
I got to a point where everybody was starting to take notice saying, well, wait a minute here. I don't want that $100,000 to just go to the weight room. I want part right. of the school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our development office started getting involved, right? So how do you prevent that money going elsewhere and only stays in your department?
And I'm not saying we did 100K because that's – I'm about to pick your brain a little bit after this because that's impressive. But, it has happened now. They're, like, taking note of everything that we're doing. And luckily – and what I've learned from my mentors in business and then my MBA, like we document everything. Everything that gets donated is specifically tagged, and you can do this. Like, just be like, this is specifically set aside for strength conditioning or, you know, men's soccer or athletic training. So we make sure when all the money we get is legitimately and categorized correctly and done so according to the accountants and our foundation and stuff. Like, I meet with the school accountants frequently and be like, look, I need to know exactly what these codes are. And I need to know exactly what these are going to make sure like we right. cover our own butts. And then, like I said, it just goes back to speaking the language of our accountants or our alumni board or anything like that. I could just be upfront with them and tell them specifically, like, this is what it's going for. This is how we're going to tag it. And this is how administratively, how it's going to be labeled and listed as to make sure, you know, we do what's right for us. And most everybody knows our situation. They know we don't have a huge budget, and they know, you know, we're getting nicer stuff. So it's kind of, jealousy doesn't rear its head too often, but when it does, I could be like, look, it's all legal. It's done correctly. And it's done according to what was set forth by our foundation, all of our school accountants.
I think the last, not objection, but I guess question would be,
yeah.
How are you tracking these people, these vendors,
right,
boosters and whatnot?
Hey, and it's kind of weird when we started doing this fundraising, the school was just creating this department. So, we created our own system because, where we know, you know, the McKeefer family gave us this much money. The Castilleja family gave us this much money. The Smith family gave us this much money. And I have lists and documents and everything that goes on. Like, here's what they gave to, and the McKeefer family, you know, was mostly been all t-shirts. So we're going to focus mostly on, you know, advertising our t-shirts, the McKeefer family, our Castilleja family. They did mostly all the day of giving and our crowdfunding. So we're going to push that. And on top of that, we're going to push both. And then, another thing is, at least here at MSU Denver, it's like me and my two assistants and all 16 teams. So technically all the sports alumni is our alumni. It's not just, you know, football alumni. It's just not just basketball. It's like everybody, if you walk through these doors, which you do as an athlete here, you're going to be one of our alumni. So it's creating an extensive, like, alumni, you know, network and really letting them know. You know, going into my seventh year here, I've been able to see like a couple of recruiting classes for every sport. So, you know, you just graduated, congrats. Like, hey, here's the MSU Denver strength shirt. Think about us in the future. Like,
right. You
know, I'm not going to step over a dollar to pick up a dime. Like, if you can give us 10 bucks on the day of giving, I'll treat you like a VIP. Like, it's important. Like, your money goes a long way for us. And we just document it and have our own database of everybody that's donated over time. And then, you know, so people who are.
That's what I'm saying. You keep track of that database.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Yeah, absolutely.
The development or anything like that. And you're just kind of working through them to get it.
Yep. And then we're always reaching out. Or if we hear about potential donors or, you know, what another big donor is besides our own personal donors is like there are like weight room champions. Like, we have athletes in here who just love the weight room and they're willing to go talk to their parents who have, you know, some money, and they don't, their parents, instead of donating to that sport, will donate to strength conditioning in a pretty good amount. And like, it's little things like that, like letting them all know that they're important to us And then we keep track of our own stuff, keeping our own database. Just so I know, every dollar that comes into our weight room, it's accounted for, and we make that person feel thankful. Like, one of our budget thing is like cards, like thank you cards. Like, we budget a really nice thank you card, and all of us on staff will handwrite thank you cards for whether it's a t-shirt or whether it's the day of giving or just anytime. We have an alum that gives us $25 a month. It's perpetuity. So that's pretty impressive. Like, that's $25 a month that we don't have to worry about.
Right.
Thank you. And reaching out to them, saying, hey, and here's what we have upgraded. Here's what your dollar did. We were able to get bridges and jammer arms on our racks. So here's exactly what you're going for. We're not just hoarding this money. It goes directly within most likely months of us getting the money to helping out your son, your daughter, or your own team.
Yeah, I think that's an important piece. It's it can be a transactional one-time thing, or it could be a relationship that they feel like they're part of it. And even 10 years ago, I created a Facebook group that was just for our donors that, what I was doing is I was promoting something that I already knew I had the money for.
Right.
So I remember, we had 12 racks. I wanted 12 TRXs. So I would put up videos of Drew Brees using the TRX or Gabrielle Union using it or I'm sorry, Gabrielle Reese or whoever else. Right. And I knew I had that money already, but I was promoting it like you were giving to this, knowing that money was always going to go back to something, but I would give them a win. People saw that money was actually going to end up with something.
Right.
So it's the science of buying, right? It's the
exactly. Science. Yep. Yep. And they eat that up too, or even on our Instagram, we got our gear, we're going to give you a shout out on Instagram, even if you're a family member and not an athlete. And so we got, kids' parents taking pictures with their sweater on from the MSU Denver strength staff.
Yeah, that's good.
Shout out. It helps out a lot. And plus, your dad's on MSU Denver strength story. And
right.
It's like you said, it's the science of buying. And we try to, it's a lot easier to take one person and keep them versus going to get a new person. So if we do get a new person, we treat them like a VIP, and we let them know that we appreciate them and everything we can to keep them feeling good about donating to MSU Denver Strength is what we do.
Yeah, it's cost of acquisition, right? Sure. I think a lot of people don't realize when you're in an athletic setting, what you're capable of leveraging in a positive way, not in a douchebag way, but in a positive is tremendous, right? You've got this, people would kill to have a platform to have access to so many people. So there's ways of using business principles to make your program better. And that's part of the job of being a head strength coach. I think too many head strength coaches only focus on the technician and the set reps, and they got their nose in an Excel spreadsheet all day long. And that's not the job. The job is to help those coaches and those athletes have the best resources, the best tools available to them to have success,
Exactly. And that's, I guess, the one, the mentorship side of thing is huge for us, but it's one thing I never learned we learn set reps, we learn Excel spreadsheets, even learn how to be a good coach. But when I became the head coach, I'm sure when you were really young, being the head strength coach is I got a budget, now I got to talk to donors, and now I got to, manage assistants and all this stuff. So it's literally the side of the stuff that you have to be good at, or else it's easy to, I wanted to be, not only did I want MSU Denver strength to be so good, I didn't want to leave, but I wanted to do such a good job as a head strength coach and as a director of a program that nobody wants me to leave. So I want to let them know, bring your big donors by. And it's just the situation I'm in where we have to fundraise. But a lot of times, there's some people at schools they don't have a budget and it's just whatever they want. But still, there's a donor somewhere along talking to that athletic director saying, look, we're going to give $1 million for the McKeefry Sports Performance Center. And somewhere somebody is glad handing him and making him feel important and letting him know his money's going to go a long way. So I wanted to make sure if we did that, it was going to come through me.
Super smart. Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice.
The best piece of coaching advice, and I couldn't put like a finger on who said it, but it's either you're coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. And that's like just as far as weight room etiquette. Like if I'm in there, I might be spotting one person, tell them something, and I'll turn my head. If I see something, I'm gonna address it right then and there. So just we know everything in there is happening for a reason. So either coaching, allow it to happen, and also like make it big time where you're at. Like yeah. That's something where I've really taken that to heart.
Give us a book, app, website.
So a book, and like I tell my staff and what you were saying, like all the strength and conditioning books, I expect you guys to read that. Like that's what it does to take be our job. So like read all of them. You don't have to use triphasic training, but I want you to have read triphasic training and know about it. But the ones that made some big impacts for us and our programs, Good to Great, and Mastery, and those two books go a lot into just, you know, what separates like some, you know, good teams from the great teams and all the discipline that's involved. And, you know, and it's, you know, definitely a corporate thing, but it's definitely like, yo, I don't want to just be the best strength conditioning coach. I want to be the best team that you've seen. Right. So, like I told you before, we had twins that were born premature. So like we spent a couple of weeks in the NICU, and I just remember like sitting there with my twins and looking at the doctors and the nurses and like the procedures that they went through. I just asked them like, yo, what do you guys do in this situation? Like learning their team and their system, because it was a really high level, because like if you mess up, a kid dies. So like
right. This is
like the highest level stuff. So I learned from them, or even my barber, she's like a manager of her own sports clips, and like they're hiring people and she's been there for 20 years. I was like, so what are you doing? Like, because a lot, you're one of the few sport clips that I've seen where all the hairstylists have been the same with very little turnover.
Right.
And you hiring these people is like, so what do you look for? Like, how do you get people smart on your team? So anybody that has to do with team and like building a better team, that's what I'm going for. And that's what Good to Great and Mastery helped me out with. As far as apps go, Team Builder, I know you're sponsored by Train Heroic, but you know, Team Builder or Train Heroic, any of these like cloud-based programming apps are just, it, you know, it took my day. Even I have a pretty robust Excel spreadsheet, like don't get me wrong, but it's still data entry and it's still printing out. Whereas here I could update on the fly and get it out to our tablets on our rack within like 30 seconds. Like
right.
If I have to adjust it, it'll be there. If a coach wants to know anything, we can show them readiness questionnaires over the last month, or just show them what our workouts are. It's just, it's taking our ability to coach to a whole nother level. So, cause we don't have to worry about the monotony of like typing it all in. But we also have Fantastical and Monday apps. They help you visualize to-do projects, calendars, and keep organized on everything, because I'm scatterbrained and my handwriting's terrible. So if I don't have anything like digital where I can go across all my devices, like I'm lost. So that's the apps that we definitely use.
You said, I know Monday I've used, Fantastical is what the other one you said?
Yeah, it looks like Fantastical, but it's Fantastical. It's like a calendar. And then you get to throw your to-do list in your calendars. It's a little bit more robust than the iPhone calendar.
Gotcha.
And then the website right now, what we use a lot is the Functional Anatomy seminars. Like I got my FRC and I really like what I've seen coming out of the FRC. So we have their website has a whole bunch of videos and stuff for the people that are certified. And it's been clutch as of late, but also, I'm not even lying, Instagram and Twitter. Like yeah. I know some of the older coaches are still like try to shy away from it. And it's just like with anything on social media, there's some really good stuff and there's some also really bad stuff. But you know, I think we're all pretty good at finding the good stuff. And like we're always shooting each other direct messages from our staff, like, yo, here's a Coach Max doing over here, or you know, here's Coach Cassia who's doing over here, like what do you think they're trying to do? Or I just reach out to them like, hey coach, like I know this is a really small glimpse of what you do, but like, what, you know, what are we doing here? And like, how can we help out?
Yeah. I think that's the most important thing is I think what I respect about you and watching you from afar is I think there's too many coaches that feel like they're victims and they're just, they're, you know, they have no control over their current situations, that it's dictated to them by coaches, administrators, or whatever. And the people that take action, I mean, tracing it all the way back to just you simply saying, okay, I'm going to reach out to every single coach that comes on this particular podcast.
Yeah.
You took action. And when you do that and you go to these originators and you go to these content creators and whatnot, then you just, you create a relationship. You benefit from all that experience, you know? And if you just, you know, learn something, take action.
Right.
It usually is a recipe for success. And you've done a great job of building that program. You've done a great job of recognizing that you're not just a technical strength coach, but you're also a manager and an entrepreneur. And just appreciate how you're going about your job, man.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, coach. And feel free to reach out. I can give you my contact info. And if you see us on Instagram or Twitter, like just reach out. Like, you know, like I said, I'm not that smart. I'm pretty smart. I'm a hard worker, but like, you know, there's people out there doing the research and coming up with like the science of it all. And I keep doing it, 'cause I'm just going to buy your book and just apply what you just did. But realistically, like I want this to be a place where, you know, strength coaches could come. And like, I guess my next big push is like making more assistant positions. Like, Cal Dietz will contribute his book and I'm going to contribute like a salaried position with benefits. Like,
right.
If I could take one strength coach out of the grind of the GA or the grind of the intern and give him a shot, like that's what I'm going to contribute. So that's what we're working for here.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.